Last night, Governor Gretchen Whitmer delivered her fourth annual State of the State address, and in it, she struck, dare we say, a friendly tone aimed at Republican state lawmakers.
Tonight, I will stay focused on the things that unite us. I'll speak to the progress we've made together, the opportunity we have right now, and why we all believe in Michigan.
If you hadn't been paying attention at all over the past 2 years to Michigan politics and you turned into this speech, you would suddenly think that, you know, Gretchen Whitmer and the Republican legislature were just like besties and getting stuff done.
But alas, dear listener, we have been paying attention. As such, we're here to help sort through the governor's bipartisan aspirations and the messy political reality of an election year. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. This is the second year in a row Whitmer gave her annual address remotely due to COVID concerns. Typically, she'd be standing in a Capitol building full of lawmakers and guests, but this year she chose to deliver her remarks from an auto plant with no audience. This gave her a direct line to people viewing or listening to the speech inside their own homes, as she highlighted broad statewide issues like economic recovery, open and safe schools.
Yeah, we called this last night. We were calling it the kitchen table speech.
That's Stateside executive producer Laura Weber Davis. She and Michigan Radio's program director Zoe Clark covered Whitmer's State of the State speech last night.
She not only said the phrase kitchen table several times, she wants to address directly what feels comfortable and normal for the people she was looking at through the camera or speaking to through the radio, rather than, you know, getting applause lines from one party or the other. It was more designed to speak to the average Michigander, I would say.
In their homes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So the kinds of issues that she brought up, I mean, there was definitely a lot there about the economy.
Yeah.
A little bit about inflation, even, I heard. What other policy issues really stood out to you, too?
For me, I mean, she didn't hit on many things. And the big thing she seemed to emphasize was policy points that she felt like she could make some bipartisan headway on, that she'd like to spend the rest of this calendar year working on issues that might be attractive to Republican leadership. And that includes the ending of the so-called retirement tax or pension tax, which we have talked about on this program, isn't necessarily an actual tax, but has been labeled that way. And also the earned income tax credit, restoring that, which in a typical year, I would say would not be attractive to Republicans. But the pandemic has just made everything so goofy. And to an extent, Donald Trump was able to shift the Republican base in a way that I think Republicans might be interested in viewing the earned income tax credit as a restoration of a tax cut rather than some sort of entitlement, you know, that the sort of uglier side of that coin, phrasing it there that way. I think that Republicans might actually be interested. And last night, Zoe, you know, we were talking with a Republican lawmaker, Graham Filler, who said there might actually be space to work on that together.
Oh, I think he basically said as much to you, Laura, when you asked where he was like, I was really happy. Or he said something, I loved hearing about tax cuts. Yeah, I mean, this was an economic speech, right? And it goes back to that old, it's the economy, stupid, particularly in an election year, which of course we are in.
Right.
As Laura said, you know, this was all about tax cuts and tax credits, whether it was the pension tax repeal, increase to the EITC. She also mentioned electric vehicle rebates.
Right.
Reminded folks about the $400 per vehicle coming later this year because of the auto insurance overhaul. And then also talked about some increases, right, in mental health spending, also wanting to cut the cost of insulin. And then really interesting, she noted that there is going to be a historic, her words, increase in education funding. And that's when her administration will outline her budget in early February.
So I did hear the Republican rep who you folks talked to last night, but what's been the word from Mike Shirkey and Jason Wentworth, the leaders of the Republican majorities?
So Mike Shirkey actually did what I'm calling a pre-buttle. a pre-sponse.
Before she even speaks.
I know, shocking. But let's be very honest. Like, this happens. You get in the inbox, you know, all of the responses and things that folks didn't like sometimes in past years, even before, you know, a speech was delivered. And that is on both Republican and Democratic sides.
Sure.
But Mike Shirkey, look, you know, he continues to talk about mandates and COVID-19 and being unhappy with the governor's reaction and work that she did to try to lessen the pandemic's impact early on. But we have to note, I mean, it's been months and months since there has been any kind of real statewide mandate vis-a-vis COVID. So that's what he talked about before the speech. Afterwards, you know, most of the responses were very interesting from Republicans. Like, the first thing was like, we're glad that she's talking about tax cuts. We're glad she's talking about the economy. We can get behind that. But dot, 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 dot. And then bringing up, you know, issues about healthcare deaths because of COVID, which, you know, we've talked about on this program before. And so it definitely was sort of like, we can all get along on this. But then, you know, backstab, front stab in the next statement, which again, in election year, is not super shocking. However, it should be really noted that this governor, particularly this year, stayed away from talking about controversial issues with the Republican legislature.
I mean, she kind of led with it right out of the gate, saying, I'm going to talk about the things that unite us, or that the things we have in common.
Yeah.
And but it's funny, like, with this subtext of the election going on in the background the whole time, it felt like she was taking the ball. She felt the ball was in her court, that she needed to make that case. Do you guys think she was successful? I mean, do people need to believe that Lansing is united to buy into Gretchen Whitmer for another 4 years, Laura?
You know, I tough to say if she made the case, but I will say that there was a relentless positive action to her address last night.
Haven't had that on my bingo card in a while.
Relentless positivity. I forget what that even means.
While she didn't say that exactly, there were a couple phrases that I was like, this looks like something Governor Snyder would have said. And he was notorious for wanting to unite, not divide, and trying to play down the middle and be a sort of centrist leader. And we have seen her moving in that direction over the past couple months. And I think that we can anticipate that her campaign is going to continue to be that way throughout the spring and summer months. And whether or not Michiganders want somebody who is centrist right now or who is making the appeal to both sides is really the open question. If people are feeling more dug in or tired of being dug in will be the fascinating thing to watch come election.
Zoe, I know the Republicans are going to try hard to hold on to their majorities in the legislature. Do you think they need that unity message to make it happen?
Oh, that's such a good question. No. right, because let's first be real clear, like, so much of election 2022 is also going to be what's going on at the top of the ticket, right? And even though Biden is not on the ballot this year, the party in the White House tends to do really poorly in midterm elections, right? Which of course is Governor Gretchen Whitmer. So, you know, then you go to, okay, so who's at the top of the ballot? Fellow Republican candidates right now, of which there are, you know, nearly two dozen trying to run against Governor Whitmer. And so, no, I mean, they want to, and you know, as I said earlier, Senator Shirkey was doing this yesterday, basically really differentiating themselves policy-wise from Whitmer. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to come out with a budget this year, but there have been some conversations. There are billions and billions of dollars in, you know, so-called Biden bucks in the federal government money that's come to the state that hasn't been spent. And there are some people going, you know, why is that? Is that because Republicans don't want to boost, you know, the economy while Whitmer is, you know, up for re-election?
It's time for a quick break. In just a minute, we'll dig into one of Gretchen Whitmer's policy priorities this year, expanding the earned income tax credit. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Like you just heard, one of the items on Whitmer's policy wish list this year is expanding the Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC. It's a tax break for lower-wage workers.
Restoring the EITC lifts more than 22,000 people out of working poverty. And it sends 730,000 families an average refund of almost $3,000 that they can use to pay the bills.
Social service advocates have been trying to restore it to 20% of the federal tax credit since former Governor Rick Snyder made significant cuts in 2011. Monique Stanton, president of the Michigan League for Public Policy, says the pandemic may have given some new energy to that effort.
I think that the pandemic blew open just so many needs that everyday families that are working in Michigan are facing. And one of the things that the EITC does for an average-sized family, that's going to raise that tax credit to $500. And that's money that often then gets spent pretty quickly. It goes back directly into our local communities. Families use it for things like maybe a major car repair, a purchase of an appliance, some type of maybe home repair, or paying back utilities to prevent a shutoff. So we know that that sum of money can make a big difference in the day-to-day lives of families in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Senator Wayne Schmidt is a Republican, and he was someone who definitely supporting the EITC. Do you think that there will be an appetite in the Republican leadership in state government, you know, to listen to what some of these members are saying? And you know, this has been something traditionally a priority of the Democratic Party. But do you think that there's a shift coming in how Republicans are talking about this at the top level?
I do think that there is a shift in terms of how Republicans are speaking about the Earned Income Tax Credit. We know that this tax credit impacts the entire state of Michigan from both urban to rural communities. And there's an appetite really to get support for our families because they have really faced unprecedented challenges in our community. So I do think that there's a good possibility that this will pass. You also see, you know, supporters ranging from the Michigan League to lots of different chambers of commerce, to different foundations, to different United Ways all throughout the state that have come out in support of that. And so I think it shows you that there's across that whole entire political spectrum, a lot of interest, support, advocacy for this issue in a time when frankly, there's a lot of things that there's a lot of disagreement about. But this is one that I think people can come together for.
Yeah. Why is it that it's been so hard to get movement on this issue over the past decade? It's been such a big priority, both for the League and for other progressive groups around the state.
One of the things back in 2011, when it was getting cut, we fought really hard to ensure that even though it was dropped down to 6%, that it stayed, because we knew when the time was right, which is right now, for it to come back, it would be much easier to increase it than try to start from scratch. And so that's a big piece of why we had that fight in 2011.
Right. The situation in terms of Congress, there was this federal expanded child tax credit that sent a lot of cash payments directly to families each month if they, you know, could meet the necessary benchmarks, including, you know, having a bank account and having had a tax bill. What did we learn about how that extra cash impacted kids directly?
So that extra cash made huge impacts for kids all across Michigan and all across our country. We knew it went to go to pay for things like school supplies. It went to pay for things like food, paid for things like childcare, really helping to ensure that family was stable in such a destabilizing, uncomfortable, stressful time. You know, on social media the other day, this is just an anecdote. One of the things that I had seen a post about was somebody had gone to a food line recently, it's been since the child tax credit expanded, and they were out of food. And one of the things that people were talking about is that there's just now more need in our community now that that's not available.
Mm. We've heard a lot about how the expanded child tax credit program cut the rate of childhood poverty. Do we know what expanding an earned income tax credit here in Michigan could do to poverty rates? Would you foresee that being a dent that we could measure?
Right. We're talking about it impacting 1 million children in Michigan. It's a huge number of kids that are really, you know, in poverty and right on the edge. We also recognize with this expansion, it's going to help bring up about 22,000 Michiganders out from poverty. Those are huge figures. And over 700,000 people will be eligible and have access to that tax credit.
What does this mean on the ground, though, on a personal family level?
So it means, let's say, you know, transportation, whether you're living in a city or you're living in rural Michigan or you're up in the UP, is a barrier in Michigan. And if your car is not working, you can't get to work, you can't get to your doctor's appointment, you can't take maybe your parent to their healthcare provider. It makes it difficult to take your children to school and to after school activities. And so it can help you make a major car repair. We know it can help you pay for childcare. It can help alleviate some of that stress that maybe a family member would not, or a person may not have the opportunity to fix or buy something that is truly needed at that time. We know from research that this money also goes directly back out into the community. So it's not something that people tend to hold on to. It's something that they're able to use and plan for to make some kind of large fix in their lives.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes for streaming at michiganradio.org. Today's pod episode was produced by April Van Buren. Other producers on our show are Aaron Allen, Mike Blank, Mercedes Mejia, and Claire Morishima. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.